Hey everybody, I want to welcome you to another episode of How to Leave a Cult. I am your host, Brooke Walker, and How to Leave a Cult is a summary of my life story, a big chunk of it anyway, in growing up in a religious cult and church that was started in Mesa, Arizona, and then moved to the Payson area. And I also like to share some things that I've done to heal and help to advocate for people who have been a victim to some kind of religious abuse. So, thank you for joining me today. Last week, we talked about the chaos that went on a regular basis. And how chaotic the environment was, how difficult that was to grow up in. And it's interesting because I even recently had a conversation with my mom about it, and we were talking about it kind of in different terms. But when you're in something, you don't really realize the degree of what's going on. It really is not something until you get out of the situation that you look back on and you go, wow, that was really crazy. That was, and it seems like the farther that I actually get from being in that environment, the more difficult I find it and the more damaging I realize it was. And I'm more healed from it, so maybe there's a piece of being able to look back and be more realistic about what it was, where I think initially I still had a lot of blinders on about what I had gone through. And I would say that that's pretty common for anybody who's grown up in a really abusive environment like we did. So today we are going to talk about kind of the next progression of what was going on at that time. And like, I try to give you guys these like screenshots of the way that it was and the way that the environment was, and kind of put them into these little bits for each piece of the story, but it's kind of difficult to do because there was so much going on at any given time. And painting the picture is hard. So if you guys have questions, like please reach out to me. Reach out to me on social media, just message me. I'm more than happy to respond if things are not clear or if you have curious your things there's things you're curious about. Like I'm here to tell the story so that people have an understanding. My hope as I tell my story is that me giving you guys a insight into what I went through, it will help other people be able to tell their stories, but also mainly be able to heal from what they've been through. I don't expect everybody to go be public about what I talk about the way that I am. I just want them to know that they can get help for it and realize that they're not alone and that you can find the resources that you need. So, hopefully, that's helpful. So, during this time period, like I've explained a few times, I'm 12 or 13 years old. We're kids, kids. And beginning to have to clean and cook and babysit on a regular basis, that was kind of the way it was, and as well as go to school. And the amount of kids that were around at the time of different ages, I mean, it varied depending on the generation, but in my group, I would say there was probably 6 to 8, depending on where you started and ended the generation. My sister, who was 3.5 years older than me, there was probably another 6 to 8 in hers. And they kind of blended together too. There was those ones that were kind of in between that kind of went up or kind of went down or, But we all kind of grew up pretty close to each other. Those were also two different, a lot of them were siblings like us, so it was a handful of parents with multiple children that all hung out and played together and were growing up together and going to school together, and we were all very close. And then there was these handful of other people who would come in and bring their kids with them. There's several I can think of that were there for a short period of time, a year or so, and then there was others that came and stayed. And others that just barely stopped by, I would say. So through there was a revolving door of people. So of this group of 100 and some people, there was consistently a revolving door of people that would come in and out. So there was always this core group, and then there was always ones who came and went. And I shared last time, like us as teenagers, we were pretty much told that we were kind of like the naughty group. And I talked about how the school was going through a transition because it was moving towards Payson. So because of that, initially, all of a sudden, we get sent to go live in Payson. Not my parents, just me and Mary at one point. So now we're living up there. My parents are living in Mesa. So, I mean, this is roughly 2 hours away at the time. Now it's a much quicker drive because they've expanded the roads, but probably about closer to a 2 hour drive, hour and a half drive. And we lived with different people at the time. Like I can tell you stories of different people that we lived with. I remember at one point we were going to school up there, and Sandra, who's Trina's sister, who's also a medium, like I remember her making us breakfast in the morning and serving us eggs and also serving us orange juice that was clearly spiked with vodka. And I don't know that it was intentional or if she just wasn't paying attention, because like she had a picture of, because back then you made the big contain, you would make the tube of orange juice that came out of the freezer and put that into a pitcher. And so, yes, she was clearly serving us vodka and orange juice in the morning one time. And we all kind of laughed about it. But we were kind of drinking sometimes anyway. So, and then we would go to school and we were getting taught. And for a portion of that time, we were getting taught in, they had like reserved part of the firehouse to do a schoolroom. And we would get taught in there. And there was multiple people who would teach us there, like groups of those who had moved up towards Payson, and it was outside of Payson in an area called Tonto Village. So, and school consisted of a lot of spiritual stuff, and then whoever else came in. I remember there was a guy, he was a mechanic, so he came in and did a class on, how to take care of your car and taught us all how to change a tire. Actually, super useful. I think everybody should learn how to do that. There was a woman who came in, and we thought she was crazy. I mean, but she came in and taught us yoga and used to make yogurt, and she would bring us homemade yogurt, which is a little more crunchy at the time than it seems now. I feel like that's so common now, but at the time it was like it was a stretch for us for sure. It was not something that we really wanted to engage in, but we did. And then there was the spiritual studies that Trina would come in and teach us. And I mean, when I try to talk about the spiritual studies and the stuff that we had to do, like I've talked about some of the papers we had to write, like, and having to do Valentine's cards that had Sai Baba on them. And so we would do these Valentine cards to our parents, roses are red, violets are blue, with Sai Baba on the front. I'm so thankful you brought me to this church so that my soul can be saved. Like that is, and I'm not exaggerating. That's the kind of stuff it was. It was like we'd have to write papers about how thankful for, about how we had chosen our parents, but we were so thankful that we chose our parents because they brought us to this church, even though they were kind of like really messed up. So it was this insane gaslighting, insane gaslighting. And I mean, Trina would come to the school, and I still remember this because I was really very disturbed by it at the time. She came to the school and she would go around the room and just ask like random questions. And like one of the questions, and I'm like 12 or so, maybe 13. And her question to me, and I've told you guys what like vibration is, which is, you know, your soulmate. So she asks me, and this is, you know, in a round room with, or in a big rectangular room with us all lined up who are going to school at this school at the time. And she's like, and it's like we were being tested on our ability to understand the teaching. So she's like, would you be okay if I slept with your like vibration? And I remember at the time, what bothers me about this is I remember at the time how unsure of the answer I was. I was completely guessing, but I felt like if I got it wrong, I was going to be in a lot of trouble. And so she's asking me if she can sleep with my like vibration, and I'm like 12 years old and single. And I'm like, no. And somehow I'd actually gotten it right. Because at one point I was like, well, I don't know. She's like, she is the minister of this church. Maybe she should be able to, I mean, this is my mindset at the time. She's the minister of the church. Maybe she should be able to sleep with my like vibration. I don't know. So, but I guessed right because she just passed by me. And she, that was the question she had for me. I cannot even, I was so stuck on my question. I couldn't tell you the other questions she asked all the other students as she went around the room, but they were all along those lines. And if anybody got them wrong based on what the expected answer should have been, then that kid was talked to and it was explained and it was like drawn out. It was just very crazy. So during this time, at some point, we get in trouble, and we were always in trouble. So we get in trouble. Honestly, I can't tell you what I did at the time. I mean, it was probably not that big of a deal. It might've just been being disrespectful, but I remember going back to where we were living and being yelled at by one of the dads in my face, like screaming. And that was the kind of stuff that was allowed on a regular basis. Like other people were allowed to discipline anybody's children, and there was really no holds barred on that. So I remember being screamed at, and there was multiple times this kind of stuff happened. I remember another time we were in a process on one of the porches, because like this is out kind of, you know, more in the like the woods area. And we are in a process on one of the porches. And this one, it's important for people to understand the kind of control and the kind of feeling of being held to a weird standard and knowing and not really knowing and understanding either. So you're just kind of like jumping through hoops, but you don't even know where the hoops are leading, and you don't even know why you're doing it, except for that you have this ultimate fear. Like I talked about last time, just having this incredible fear all the time. So I'm in a process. And again, like I'm a kid. We're sitting in this process on the porch. We're all getting yelled at for things that we've done. And again, like we're kids. When we're getting in trouble, we're talking about at this point, like, yes, we were drinking and smoking, but nobody really knew. We weren't getting caught for that. So we're just getting in trouble for having attitudes for the most part. And we had nothing better to do. Half the time when we were outside at Payson, half the time we were just, you know, we'd go to in the woods and make forts and sit and smoke cigarettes with each other. So we're on a porch. I am not sexually active by any means by then yet. And I'm getting screamed at about lying, that I must be lying about something. And at the time, I wasn't lying about anything. And I'm like sitting there trying to think of if there's anything in my head that I'm lying about that I need to tell. And I already have this huge fear. I have this huge fear of this spirit always looking over me and going to tell things on me anyway. So I think if there's anything that I haven't told by then the spirit's going to tell on me. So all I can think of at the moment is that I had been masturbating. So to me, I'm like, oh my God, like I've been masturbating. So maybe I need to tell that I've been masturbating because that's not right. Because I've also been fed this concept of sex, although I don't really understand it and I don't really know it and I'm very confused about it. And I'm not really even that interested. Like I hadn't quite really gotten to that point because I'm still like 12 or 13 at the time. And I admit that I've been masturbating to this minister of the church who is yelling at me on a porch at night, yelling at us children. What are you doing? Why are you lying? You're lying. You need to tell the truth. You need to tell the truth about what you're doing. And I was like sobbing. I was like, I've been masturbating, you know? And it's like, to me at the time, it was devastating. And I just thought, well, that just must be wrong. Like, we're not supposed to, our bodies are supposed to be this pure thing and we're not supposed to touch our bodies. And, you know, that's for something. And it's funny because I don't remember if it was explicit or implicit. And explicit means it was actually said, or implicit was just always implied. But there was this idea that men could masturbate, but women couldn't. That was the impression that I always had. And I had an impression that it was a really bad thing for me to be doing. And so it was something that I did, but I didn't do very often because I thought that I would be in trouble for it. And I thought that the spirit would know what I was doing it. And I look back at that now and I'm like, the amount of untangling I've had to do to be comfortable with myself and my sexuality, and just to be able to share my sex, you know, to be able to have my emotional self connect to, you know, the man that I love and all that kind of stuff. It has taken a really long time because it started really fucking young, you know, and there was always this perception that part of what was wrong with my parents and all of the parents was their sexual promiscuity, which was still going on. I mean, they ripped people in and out of relationships all the time. I mean, there was regularly things that were said about Stephen Camp, who was the leader. There was regular things said about, mainly about the men. Like the men were okay to be sexually promiscuous. The women, absolutely, if they did it, they were dirty whores. Not that it didn't happen on both counts, but you know, the women were always like put into this category of being these dirty whores. And then, you know, the men could just, you know, fuck freely and leave their children to the wayside. When we had moved to the church, Steve Wrench, who was one of the ministers, he was with Marlo at the time. She was pregnant with a young girl who grew up with my baby sister. That was Steve's kid. Another woman had just had a child by him. And a third had also just had a child by him. He had three kids in a very short period of time with three different women. So, but his promiscuity was never regularly brought up. Anyway, I go sideways on that. So I'm on this porch and I admit this. Nobody says anything to me. Nobody ever explained it to me. Nobody said that that's perfectly normal. I just felt like, you know, I just felt like I had poured out every deep, dark, shameful thing in my life. And then I was just left with nothing. And I remember, and that was a lot of how the processes went. And that was me at a very young age. That shit got uglier as people got older. The adults were way worse with each other. Like this was, you know, child's play. So we're in trouble for whatever we're in trouble for. And the next thing you know, we get moved back to the Valley, back to Mesa. So now we're back in Mesa. And then we get moved in with Steve and Marlo, who are two of the ministers. And it's a group of me and three other girls, all within our generation, living in a bedroom. the garage that they had redone, so it was a large one, living in a bedroom together so that Marlo and Steve could parent us for a while, which was the dumbest thing ever. And it didn't do any good either. There's not something I learned. I honestly felt like it was us to be just live-in slaves for Marlo, just so we could clean and babysit. And she had people of an age who could babysit her kids and clean. So shortly thereafter, we lived there for a while, and then I moved back in with my parents, and then I get put in public school. So now, and this is the first time I've been in public school since I lived in Maryland. So we're talking years. And I believe I was 13 at the time, because I only went to public school for a couple of years. So yeah, I had to be about 13. So I'm 13, start going to public school. I would say that was amazing. It was amazing for me because I was able to have different friends, because most of the other girls my age in the church lived, and I was getting bullied and stuff anyway. So most of them lived up in Payson. So they went to school up there. I was going to a school that nobody else was going to. And it was a bit of a relief. And I mean, it was easy. I was a straight A student without making an effort. I enjoyed school and I put some effort into what I did, but I didn't put a lot of effort into it. And I'm a straight A student. I remember I started a reading class, which was required in eighth grade. So I'm doing this reading class and the teacher has me read out loud, and I was great at reading. And she's like, well, you know, we're going to have you go next tomorrow. We're going to have you go up front and take an assessment. And I was like, okay. And she's like, yeah, she's like, you don't need this class at all. So you've tested out. So I get sent out and get to go take a different elective and took a completely different class. But like, school was not a problem for me from a intellectual standpoint, but it also wasn't promoted by any means. You know, there was nothing about going to school. Like, it wasn't, there was nothing about it that was looked up to. So I could have gotten straight A's. It didn't matter. My parents didn't. The only thing that mattered is whether we were spiritual. Our ability to be intelligent had no bearing on us. And it was kind of almost like to pursue that too much was negative. So I really didn't. And so yeah, I started going to public school, which I enjoy. And then the other thing that began happening with the older siblings, and some of them being kind of high school age, like they were getting into relationships then. I'm not talking about dating. I'm not talking about high school sweethearts and flings and stuff like that. They were getting into relationships. Summer got into a relationship. She was one of the daughters. She got into a relationship with her husband. And then all the girls, and my sister was her age, they all began getting into relationships. And I remember one of the big significant things was that I began to understand that you got in a relationship with who you were told to get into relationships with, you know, and this is where the rules of the church came in and were taught really heavily. And, you know, I remember one of the girls was not a fan of the boy that she was getting put in a relationship with. And there was this regular, like, processing of them for fighting what the Spirit told them that they were supposed to be doing. Because the Spirit said so. And you do what the Spirit says. So if the Spirit says you're supposed to be in a relationship, you better be in that relationship. And if you do something outside of what the Spirit tells you to do, then you're basically going against God. Even at such a young age, like being confused about sexual stuff and being confused about where I'm going relationship-wise, I remember thinking at a very young age, God, I really hope I like whoever the spirit tells me I'm supposed to be with someday. Like, this is my level of thinking. I want you guys to know I'm a very like level-headed person at this stage of my life. So when I say this kind of stuff, it's almost humorous to me to think that that's where I was at. But that's where I was at. Like, that is what I believed because that is what I was told. And it was really sad. So for me, and so my sister was in a relationship and they were together, but I think she was like 15 and she's with somebody. The other girls are getting relationships. They're all like 16, 17, like 18, getting in a relationship. And we're not talking dating. This is not dating. It's not like, oh, like, see if you like them and you guys will date for a couple years. This is like, you're fully in a relationship. You're going to be together. You're going to be living together shortly. And then as soon as you're living together, then that means that that is your spouse and your significant other, even before the marriage happens. And as soon as that person is your significant other and your spouse, that means that you have to take care of them and the expectation of all the things you're supposed to do. So as a man, that meant that you worked and you worked full time. So all these men, boys, you know, there's no going to prom and having and being in sports and doing all this stuff or pursuing something in hopes that you can go to college. That is not the path. Okay. The path is you're going to work. And you're going to serve and you're going to become a child of this church and you're going to become an adult of this church. And that means that you will do as you're told. You will get in a relationship. You will be with that person that is chosen by God. And because it's chosen by God, this is who you're expected to be with the rest of your life. And you will live together and he will work and what he does for work will help to support you, whether that was a family business or whether that was a business that got paid. So some people worked in family businesses and didn't necessarily get paychecks. And the women will cook and you will be having children soon. Like, this was the steps. These are the things that you're going to do. And this is what I have to look forward to. So even though I'm going to like junior high, I'm not even in high school yet. Like, these are the expectations. So, gosh, going to junior high was great because it was easy compared to what I would have to go home to. But I didn't know how to bring it all together in my brain. Like, I would go to school, I'd come home, help my mom cook, do my homework. And then by the time I hung out with friends, like, if we went out on weekends, it was drinking, smoking pot. And I mean, it was not a great life. It was chaotic. And if we were in trouble for something, then we would get processed about it, which would be, I mean, I told you just about, you know, something at a very young age, like this is, you know, a year or two later, that stuff just kept progressing and progressing and progressing and getting worse and getting worse and getting worse to the point that it was just, we were full-blown adults by the time we were barely teenagers. So that kind of is how things ended up turning, you know, the relationship started turning and kind of school and the moving and, you know, I mean, this is all within short periods of time. It's like within a year or so, it's like this happened and this happened and this happened, changing schools, moving a couple times, you know. This person's in a relationship, that person's in a relationship, being yelled at for this, and it was just all the time. And that's just what was happening with me. That doesn't include all the other things and what was going on with my parents and what was going on with my other siblings all the time. Like, so I think that's a good amount for today. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed some of the book resources I gave you guys last week. Another thing that I really want to share today is practicing gratitude. I practice on a regular basis gratitude. And it has been such a wonderful thing in my life. And to me, practicing gratitude is being able to raise your emotional state and to be thankful about everything that exists for you. So, if, regardless of, it's appreciating what you have. And my favorite time that I've done this, when I did it the first time that I did it, I practiced it based on the amount of, about, I practiced it based on my age. So the first time I really got into gratitude is when I turned 40. And I did 40 gratitudes for 40 days that were all completely different. And I actually posted them on Facebook. I would recommend take your age and do a gratitude every day for every year that you've been on this planet. Every one of them needs to be something different. And I just want you to focus on it for about 1 or 2 minutes. What it is, why it brings you so much joy. And you guys, it could be having a roof over your head. Like, I am so incredibly grateful for the home that I live in. And then spend every moment thinking about what that means to you. I am so, the people that you love, I am so incredibly grateful for my children. They bring so much joy into my life, and seeing them grow and become adults and become kind and loving. Like, there's so many ways to just sit and think of the things that are meaningful to you. So do that on a regular basis. It begins to change so many things. Like, you will notice things in your life begin to change when you do that. It's beautiful. So hopefully that's great for you guys today. Have another amazing week, and I will see you soon. Bye-bye.